Our world is magical. Games are magical. Open your eyes and prepare to discover how magic and games intersect.
Merry meet and welcome to Covenstead, a podcast about gaming and magic.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Covenstead. I'm Danny, and with me is my cohort covenmate, friend, Todd.
Hello, everybody, and thank you, Danny. We're here. We're going to talk about something that is near and dear to both of our hearts on both a personal and a professional level today. And before we started recording, I gave Danny the heads up. There is a slight possibility that I just might cry on this episode. We're going to go full Barbara Walters on this, and we're going to wait for the moment when the weepiness begins, possibly.
Since you put it that way, I'm sure everybody who does what we do has figured out the only thing that can make you cry is freelance.
Yes. Sometimes they're tears of joy. Sometimes they're tears of sadness. Sometimes, a lot of times, actually, they end up being tears of fatigue. And if that isn't a teaser for how things are going to go today, I don't know what is.
Yes. We are talking about freelancing.
Now, in your particular case, and I think maybe it's something that's really good to clarify in case anyone doesn't know, specifically what areas of freelance we're in. Because some of the freelance work that I've done, there are times where, yeah, someone's literally waiting for you to submit something by a certain time because there's deadlines to printers. So what specifically, tell our coven mates out there, what it is specifically that you do and have done in freelance?
I mostly am a freelance writer. So I do a lot of freelance writing. I especially for role-playing games, and I do fiction and everything as well. But mostly for role-playing games, I write a lot of setting stuff, what people might call the fluff, so to speak. The histories, the NPCs, in character letters you find in books sometimes, all of that extra stuff to add atmosphere and depth is usually what I write when I'm doing RPGs. Not that I haven't done, character creation stuff or mechanic stuff. It's just not, I feel like, what I'm the best at. So, that's mostly what I do. What about you?
Yeah.
For the people my in work, the audience.
Yeah. My work was basically in what is generally known as production design, but where most people know it as layout. So while I have done some more traditional graphic design work for some clients, logo design, website graphics, and all this other kind of stuff, the large majority of stuff that I have been doing for the last 5 years particularly has been layout work or production design. And it's been for an assortment of tabletop RPGs, board games, and card games for pretty much all my time, with aside from a couple little things here and there. Like I did work on the CD that Aloy LaSanta just put out last year. That was kind of the exception to the rule. Everything else I've done has been tabletop gaming, which has been something that I've been really blessed with because that's specifically what I wanted. But mine is very much kind of all the elements are put into place. All the writing has been done. It's been edited. It's been proofed. The artwork and everything has been done. There's a template for how everything is supposed to look. And then my job was to take all those elements and mash them together in a cohesive way that checks off all the boxes that everyone came up with when the project was first conceived. So all of that text
has to fit within. So not demanding at all.
No, not demanding. No pressure whatsoever. And it's also, too, because it's the last thing that happens, all the other delays that may have come about in the previous stages of product development. And it does happen for so many different reasons. By the time it gets down to production design, all the excuses have been used up. Like the buffer zone is pretty much, there's maybe one or two extra days that are left. And now it's time to really get crashing on all this other kind of stuff. So yeah, that's what I've been doing primarily. I've done some writing gigs. I did some of my stuff was actually published for Earth Dawn 4th edition, which was really cool. And as much as I've wanted to be able to do freelance game design, it never happened. It never manifested. Pretty much everything I've done has been for myself, published by myself.
So I think, just to be fair, we should sandwich this like any good critique. Talk about some good things about freelancing, and then we'll get into, you know, some more of the more difficult things. And then we'll end up maybe with some more good things, hopefully.
All right.
Maybe? Deal. How does that sound?
That sounds excellent. That sounds like having an egg salad sandwich where there's nothing wrong with the bread, but you're not a fan of egg salad.
Yes, yes. So I guess I'll start. What I really appreciate about freelancing is several things. I'll name a couple. The first is you get to make your own schedule most of the time. You have deadlines, but no one gives a crap if you're meeting those deadlines at 3 a.m. or 3 in the afternoon. So that's a good thing. I always appreciate that. As someone who is more nocturnal than anything else, I really appreciate that flexibility. And yes, as I said before, you do have deadlines, you know, so you do have someone waiting, you know, on whatever it is you're writing. It's just within that context. Like if I have a week to get something done, let's say, I can do it whenever I want in that week. You know, yes, I have a deadline and I have to get it in by a certain day, but within that week, I can work on it whenever I want to, which means I could go to a movie at Wednesday at 2 p.m. at a matinee if I wanted to, and then come home and work a little bit until dinner. You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of up to you as a freelancer and doing that sort of thing to kind of create your own time schedule, you know, manage your own time, which is I really like. But yeah, that's mostly what I do.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely something about how it's all set up, that the way that you can personalize it to suit however you live your life. Like in your case, you're a night owl, very much like my wife is. And, you know, if your new work schedule can kind of float around your own time, it's like, I do my best work between midnight and 6 a.m. Done. Because, yeah, you don't have someone constantly hovering over you.
Yeah, it's, you know, so that's what we've worked in. So we've done different sides of it. Something else that I appreciate about freelancing is being able, especially freelance writing and RPGs and stuff like that, is being able to do such a variety of different things. Like, no project is the same. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You can be working on, you know, ninjas one day and then Conan the next and then, you know, some other genre another day, you know, like it's always a fresh thing, you know, it's not going in doing the same thing day after day. It's always a new mental challenge. It's always a new creative challenge and something different. So I always really liked that about freelancing. It's yeah. Different stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely, and it's kind of one of those things where the nature of the business, you know, with some rare exceptions out there, you know, because you can get freelance work that's very long term, where it can be the equivalent of like a 12-month contract, and you need to invest full 100% effort on that one particular project. But for the most part, you're always bouncing around from one thing to another. Whether or not it's a different genre, it's a different medium, you know, it can be all over the place. And in some cases, it's even on the same day. I've had times where I was working on two board games for Renegade Game Studios simultaneously, one of them being Artisans of Splendid Vale, which is this magnificent, beautiful, very large game. This thing is massive. Like you could hurt somebody if you drop this box on them. Like it's a big freaking box. And it, everything about it is, while it's a very kind of more traditional fantasy kind of storyline and everything like that, there are so many components where the artwork is definitely more on the cute side. everything has a very different aesthetic from the other game I was working on, which was Wrecklin Run, which was a post-apocalyptic Mad Max single-player card game of junk cars trying to destroy each other. Very different aesthetics, incredibly different gameplay, and there would be times where I'd be working on Artisans, and then all of a sudden have to suddenly jump on to fix something for Wrecklin because, oops, before this can get approved, this person, we need to get this fixed. And it can be a lot of bouncing around, and that's simply the nature of the work. It's the nature of the industry as a whole. Everyone's got so many different plates spinning, and at any time, any company whose name you've ever seen on a store shelf has more than likely been doing different things. Like, well, one project is during writing, another project is in editing, another project is in production. You know, like there's constant wheels always, always, always spinning.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. And a third thing, I think, before we move on that I really appreciate is the people I meet in general. Like, I get to meet so many people who are creative and talented and have great ideas and are just really nice people and really empathetic people and people who are really passionate about gaming and writing and the arts. And that's always something that I always appreciate about freelancing. Constantly get to meet new people. And because by nature of the industry, a lot of it, as people will know, and we'll probably get into a little bit later, is, you know, you meet someone who you do a project for, who then recommends you to somebody else. You know, you kind of create these huge networks of people, you know, that kind of hold the same values you do, you know, want to focus on the same things for creativity, have the same goals for their art. And that's always really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And these are people that, like, the communication between them can be incredibly open. It's one of those things, everyone's always learning from each other. You know, whether or not it's how to do what you're already doing in a different way, or to basically kind of improve your output, or shortcuts to doing something, to, you know, people who specialize in a different type of game, or a different genre than you normally would get used to.
Yeah.
It's kind of one of those things where there's lots of people to really kind of learn off of, because there really is, there's competition, so to speak, but that competition I find is before you get the gig. Once you have the gig, you're now on board with a bunch of people that have this diverse area of experience. They've come from working with different clients on different things, and they bring their various approaches into it. And it's a really interesting way to learn things. And that's, yeah, I agree. That's been one of the things I've been really grateful for, is like the work I've been doing the last couple of years. When I was going full time, I really felt like I had to step up my game, because the other people that I was working with, you know, it was very intimidating at first, of just like, oh, these people actually remember all the terminology from school. Okay, right. You know, I got to make sure I'm looking up stuff, because I don't want to say, no, we've got to fix the leading on this. And in fact, that's not what we're talking about at all. They're talking about fixing the X height. Like, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. But it is one of those things go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that, I mean, they push you to be better. Like, push you to really, you know, step up, you know what I mean? Supporting each other and stuff in a good way, you know, not pushing you past your abilities, but supporting you and inspiring you to do the best that you can, because they're doing the best that they can and all that. So I totally agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also too, it's because of it, you end up with something. It's like we've talked about before with collaboration and everything. Except now it's on a bigger scale, in the sense of the end result is something that would never have happened without that particular collaboration. Like, even if, you know, like even on my own personal side, you know, like when I first started doing some of the more recent production design, it was literally a case of it. Sometimes it felt like I was just doing a copy paste, you know. I didn't have necessarily my input into it. But very quickly, I started to realize is that there are some key decisions that are being made that I'm putting into this product that really help to improve with readability of the product. Times where it's just like, you know what, if we just leave this one word, I'm sure like there's nothing wrong with it and it balances well. But if I move that word to the start of the next line, do a little soft return, it just makes looking up that rule, that reference, just a little bit easier. And those little touches, everyone's putting their own little elements into that. And that to me is like one of the really cool things about it. It's also too, these are projects that, personally speaking for me, have been ones where there's no way in hell I would have made these myself for various reasons. Either I don't have the resources to make a 40-pound board game, you know, like Artisans of Splendid Vale, that has four 400-page books inside and all of these maps and drawings and illustrations. This thing would have cost me a fortune. You get to make stuff that you otherwise wouldn't be able to do if you were just doing something yourself. You get to be a part of this team working towards getting this thing done. And the end result is just like really cool. Like, I, you know, now that I've had some of these things that I've worked on, these board games particularly, I have them on an open shelf. It's very easy for me to turn over and look and remember that even though there may be some horror stories involved at certain points in time, like when we found out that we decided that this project was going to have two color bullets, which was a fairly new thing that you could start using in InDesign. But then as we started getting closer to production date, we started realizing that it's not a format that can actually be exported and recognized by the printer, because it's so new. And so we had to figure out, like, scramble, because all this time and effort had been invested into using these particular kind of bullets. We went to a lot of trouble to find a way to make this work that would be compatible for printers to render everything. And I'm getting obviously a lot more technical because there's a lot of technical stuff that comes with my side of the of the business.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's, yeah, that's, you have, you have to make do and and figure this stuff out. And because there's no going back, because then that's the other thing too that I find is that you have to work within these parameters. You don't get to make that call to say, you know what, we'll skip it, we'll go back to a one color. It's like, nope. And there is a really interesting challenge in that where you, if it was your own project, you'd be like, you know what, fuck it, let's just move on. Let's, we got other things that we have to fry. And in doing so, you, it feels, it does feel so much better when you do figure it out. So that now when I look at that game and I see those bullets, I know what it took to make that work. And I get a little chuckle.
Yeah, you have an appreciation for the work that goes into creative work as a freelancer.
Yes.
Because you see it from all sides. You know, you see it from the end product when you, when you hold it in your hands and you see that, and then you see how it works from behind in a lot of different ways. You know, because you have the, because you're doing all these different projects, you see how many different people work, and you see how many obstacles there can be and how unique each thing is. So you have an appreciation for these things that come into your hands that are creative. You have an appreciation that a lot of people don't have, I'm ashamed, I'm sorry to say, for creative effort and the work that goes into the type of things that we put out, you know? And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that you and I met through our work. So,
Exactly. Like, I hired you as a consultant and then to write, like, you know, 500 words, and then, you know, basically said is like, you know, and then it just kind of elevated to its own thing. So it's like, and that's happened. Right. Like, there's people that I've met through freelance are people that I've reached out to later on and said, hey, I could use some help with this. You know, would you be interested? Yeah. Are you available? or sometimes two. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you have these people you can kind of bounce some things off. It's just like, hey, how would you mm-hmm. handle a case like this? Like, that's, I think right. I've got something, but it doesn't feel right, you know? And everyone, like I said, once you've got, there is a competition that's out there in the market, but once you kind of get past that barrier, it's like trying to get into a really exclusive club. There's a long line outside and a lot of people who really want to get in. But once you get mm-hmm. in, you can just show up anytime you want. Like that really is kind of the state of the industry. If you decide, you know what, this is not the kind of club for me. I want out. I'm more of a country western kind of fella. You know, cool. You can totally do that. If you decide that, you know, this is the kind of thing that you want to keep on doing, that door is always open. But at the same time, too, that doesn't necessarily mean that you can just go ahead and throw up all over the floor, you know, and make a huge mess and break stuff. Yeah. Eventually, you know, there's always the risk that you'll get kicked out of the club.
Yeah. You talking brought up another point for me in that you have access to so many brains, you know, that anything you want to do, you have so many brains to pick, and there's bound to be somebody who has several solutions to your problem or question or, you know, way to help you work through something that you're trying to work through. You know, and yeah, like we met through, you know, you wanted to ask me to come, but you knew of that because we worked on the same project together. So you knew of me through that. And I knew of you through that when we worked, both did stuff for Third Eye Games. So, you know, that's how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, you never know how these things are going to play out. And that's the great part. It's like, I've always liked not knowing what every day is going to be like. It's one of those things where, like, as someone who really enjoys the thrill of playing it out as it goes, of improv, so to speak, and that adrenaline rush of creating something on the fly and it works out well, when I had my accident and I had a lot of cognitive issues that I had to overcome, one of the things that people kept saying is stability, consistency, repetition, those are your friends from now on. And it's like, but I don't like repetition. I don't even like the idea that I have a morning routine. It's like, I get it and it works and it's functional, but at the same time too. So, you know, I try and mix things up just in tiny little ways because it helps me differentiate between one day or the other kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that idea of nothing is ever the same and that nothing ever goes as planned. And at the same time too, there is this kind of relief of just like, well, I'm glad I'm not going to be footing the bill for this mistake. You know, it's kind of like, it's not, you know, as long as you're not the one who was the cause of this issue, you know, you're just going to be like, okay, well, let me know when it's fixed and I'll jump back in. You know, like it's, you get to kind of wash your hands of it in that sense too. It's like you've been asked to carry all this money to the bank, but at the same time too, you're not responsible for paying taxes on it.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, let's move on. This was your topic to bring up. So to get to the main event, did you have anything specific you wanted to bring up first to discuss about freelancing?
Well,
we've kind of talked about some of the positives and kind of what the life is
Yeah, for me, it's one of those things. So a little backstory for everybody out there, and especially too, maybe it's the year 2037 and, you know, you're not aware of what's going on yet. So very recently, I've decided to step out of doing freelance full time. I mean, pretty much really stepping out of doing freelance altogether, with the exception of, you know, taking on odd gigs and all this other kind of stuff, because my career reached a point where it was completely unsustainable. It was becoming very difficult. It was very strenuous, very taxing, and it was just all of a sudden kind of one thing after the other started happening that just made it harder and harder. And it started to affect, you know, like I had one contract, and it was going to be for about $5,000 American worth of work. Put a lot of time and effort into it. And that kind of work, you have to clear aside part of your schedule. So you're not doing as much other stuff. There's no secondary jobs at the moment because this primary one's going to take a big chunk of time. And then that person got back in touch with me after a couple of months and said, sorry, but I've had to declare bankruptcy, so I'm not going to be able to pay you. The project's not going to happen anymore. And that was it. And that's a large chunk that is gone. And then things would kind of spiral out of there. So it's doing it on a full-time basis. Because I think a lot of people, when they think freelance, I think when it comes to tabletop role-playing especially, is that it's a little part-time gig. It's a side gig that you do. You have a day job, so to speak. But the freelance is something that you do on the side. You submit articles for this magazine over here. You write adventures that go up on, you know, the Dungeon Masters Guild. And you do little bits on the side here and there. Doing it full time in the industry, working with what I would maybe unfairly call professional clients. And I mean companies with millions of dollars on the line. With international distribution deals, you know, like that kind of stuff. That's a level that is, it takes everything and ramps it up to a 14, you know. And at the same time, too, the results of all that work and effort were, you know, quickly starting to not pay off, where I was busting my ass to try and keep up and still get more work while not making enough to make all my ends meet. And it just got to the point where it was like, okay, I've got to start stepping back. I think it's time for me to go back and get like a regular job. It's like tracking down invoices. Like, this isn't something where everything comes to you nitty gritty. Okay, every 2 weeks you'll have this money in your account, not a problem. And, you know, here's the tax form that you need. It's really no different than being like a professional handyman, where you have to send out invoices and then hope those clients are good at paying their invoices on time, if they pay at all in some cases. And never having, you don't have a regular flow of money coming in. It quite often, at a full-time level, the money is in when the money shows up, and there's no recourse for you otherwise. Unless it's a $500,000 contract, there's no purpose to taking this thing to court to try and get it from them. It just for me got to the point where it was getting really stressful and I needed to step back and I wanted to do things on a part-time level. But then I had a client, and I don't want to use names, and it's a little unfair to all my clients because that vagary leaves it open to interpretation. And interpretation is where mistakes can be made. But at the same time, too, this is not the whole company got together and cast a secret ballot and did it survivor style. And then the camera cuts to me and I find out I'm the unfortunate one who's put on a raft. But somebody at one of my clients made the decision that I had made a mistake on a project, and rather than bring it to my attention to see if it's fixable and get it fixed and everything like that, the decision was made, that's it. We're not going to work with this guy anymore. And so when I needed, you know, work to keep coming in while I was going through a transition, the rug was, to me personally, very unfairly pulled out from underneath me. And that's one of the things, one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up as a topic, is because anytime I've ever heard people talking about freelancing, it's always been fun, a fun cautionary tale. It's like, oh, it's amazing. It's really interesting. Like, because you're hearing it from people currently working in the biz. And mm-hmm. I find that there is sometimes maybe not enough. There isn't an old man who's yelling in the microphone going like, don't do it. They're just using you. They're just using you, you know. And right, I know, my opinion is incredibly biased at the moment because this is a very fresh wound. This last thing happened 2 weeks ago, and it was a gut punch. That sudden realization that my career was truly over. Like, unmistakable. My full-time career as a freelancer in tabletop is over. And I felt like a hockey player who finds out in the middle of a game that he's being traded to another team. Mm-hmm. It feels like this huge level of betrayal because you put in so much and everything else like this. And if you are an NHL fan and you know anything about the Montreal Canadiens, you know exactly who I'm talking about. I can never think of that. Mike Camilleri, there we go. Mike Camilleri, back when I used to watch hockey, in the middle of the frickin' game, didn't come back on the ice in the third period. Everyone's like, what happened? I don't think he got injured or anything like that. And then the news was leaked that he was traded while coming out of the locker room, walking down the hall to go back on the ice, pulled him aside and said, hey, we're sending it to New York. And that was it. Like, you know, it really felt like that. Oh, wow. Yeah. Mid-game. Yeah. Dick move. Oh. Wow, yeah. And that's what it felt like for me. And it sucked.
It's hard. And just so you don't feel like alone in that sort of thing, I have had similar things happen to me like a couple times in my freelancing area career. Several big projects. And, you know, I won't get into specifics, but several big projects that I worked hard on that changed direction. Legal stuff, you know, all sorts of things that I didn't have control over. But then all of a sudden, something I had worked on for a long time was not going to see the light of day, you know? It happens. And it's, you know, it's hard because, both of these, these things that I'm talking about, I was excited for these projects. I mean, they were things I was super excited to get out in the world and be like, I did this, you know, like I was part of creating this. And that doesn't happen. And it does feel personal in a way, you know, like even though you know logically it's not, you know, at least in my case, or even if it is, which can be worse, but because the nature of the business or because somebody doesn't like you can stop you from getting work. You know what I mean? But, you know, in my case, it was things you didn't have control over that, you know, just there's nothing you can do. But somehow you feel like it's your fault or like you did something wrong or whatever. It happens, you know, it happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's because, you know, freelancers are, in my experience, 95% creative artists. This is their art form in one way or another. For you, writing is your art form. It's how you express yourself. I mean, me as well. But in this particular case, layout wasn't something that I just did. I'm very passionate about it. I actually enjoy putting together a 500-page book, especially too, because there's no way I'm going to write a 500-page book. To me, that's a ridiculous amount of words. It's like, you know, it's like, but I, you know, it's kind of like, it's just more my preference. So I like the idea that I have clients who will do that. So I have the opportunity to do it because I don't know what it is. There is just something in it that is just really appealing to me. It's like, I don't know. I can just really kind of get into the zone. And I think for me, part of my cognitive retraining after the accident was doing layout when I was working on Killshot, my first game, and really investing in each stage of that. And I think, you know, I basically became addicted to that endorphin rush that I would get with all those various phases. And there was something about layout. It's almost like if I were having like a mild seizure or something, or like I've never had them, but if I had like the equivalent of that, this feels like something that could kind of, you know, bring me back out of it, you know? And so for me, it's, I've always put something personal into every piece of layout that I've done. And everybody who is a freelancer in tabletop are artists. And so we put ourselves into things, even though they're not ours. We can't help it. That's the nature of it. That's why the stuff we make is as good as it is. If we didn't give a shit, then all you'd get is shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think back to like before I freelanced and like what I thought it would be like versus what it was like. And I think, I mean, if anything, like let's say somebody came up to me and was like, I want to get into freelancing. You know, like, what do you think? You know, I mean, like you were saying before, like the old man going, don't do it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I think going in, a lot of people, and I think including myself, even though logistically I realized, you know, it's a profession. You have to be professional. It's work, you know, but I think even logically thinking, people have this idea that it's a lot more like, I don't know, summer campy, or a lot more like laid back, or a lot less serious than it is. You know what I mean? Ah, you're just a freelancer. You're there in your underwear writing and, you know, whatever, and no one cares. And, you know, you don't shower for 4 days, you know, and all this stuff, right? and that's not it. You know what I mean? Like you get into it and all of a sudden you realize, no, like I have to keep spreadsheets of the work I'm doing. I have to have invoices. I have to keep track of the projects I'm doing. I have to be on time. I have to make sure I'm following. You know what I mean? Like people think it's a lot more, I think loose and casual and all of that sort of thing than it is, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I'd even take it a step up and say, to me, I have noticed, and this has been my experience, that there is a disparity between people who work for tabletop game companies on a salaried basis and those who are contracted, those who are freelancers. My experience has been when there has been that case. Like, you've got, you know, some publishers, everyone's freelance. The only one who isn't is the publisher. And in many cases, they're also the content creator. You're there to make their stuff look good. But those who have salaried and commissioned staff, even, I found a huge disparity in it, in the sense where it's like what you said, it's at no point in time have I ever actually had a client that said, you know what, we've got a regular online game going at this time between here and there. We always make a point of getting online, we're getting together, and we run a quick little game. Or we run the game that we're working on so we can all try it out and see for ourselves. Never. But I know salaried people within some of these companies were setting aside and having that time. You know, so the kind of things, like I'm reading Ben Riggs's book, Slaying the Dragon, the history of TSR, like, you know, the rise and fall of TSR. If you didn't know TSR fell, I got some bad news for you. Yeah. And it's there's the part in the book where you can really see how things in the industry haven't changed when you've got these young dreamers that aspire to making a game. And when they finally have their opportunity, they're like, we're going to buy an office building and we're going to cover it with water guns and Nerf pistols. And we're going to get into, like, you know, shootouts throughout the day and it's going to be amazing. And then eventually things get to a certain point where it's like, oh, we're doing millions of dollars. We better get professional about this and start wearing ties, you know. But, you know, it's just there's so much that I could identify reading what they were going through in like 1977 and everything like that to stories I hear.
And you
now.
And I are both old enough to remember TSR. Like,
yes.
We've We, you know, that's what you and I both started with, at least me. I mean, I used to read all the old Choose Your Own Adventure books. I had the original Red Box of D&D, all of that stuff, you know, and you hear, yeah. I mean, and you were talking about TSR, and I remember Onyx Path, which was White Wolf yes. back in the day. I remember hearing about, you know, they have this house that they rented. Like, they rented this house for their, like, offices, you know? And it was just this residential place, you know? Like, you know, you do what you do, and people have all these different conceptions, I think. Yeah, you know, it's hard. It's hard. It takes a lot of wherewithal. And as you and I both know, in terms of compensation for all of that, you know, it's not, you know, it's not what I feel it should be. And I'm not just saying that because it would personally help me to get paid more for freelancing. I mean, it's just a fact. And that's what anyone yeah. will tell you. You know, just recently, 10 cents a word has been the standard of the industry. It's starting to become more and more common, right? But when I started back in 2013, like, that was, like, something you couldn't even think of, you know? Like, that, you know, you were getting, like, 3 to 5 cents a word. You know what I mean? And if you got anything above that, yeah. that was pretty good, you know? And that's not on any, like, anybody who worked with me in those days. It's not to say anything about, you know, that's the industry. Like, that has nothing to do, really, with individual people. You know, this is systemic, capitalist stuff. You know, how we, you know, and how we look at arts and the people that create it and what we determine is worth money and what we determine is not worth money, you know, which makes it harder for people to make a living at it and being a freelancer. Like, I haven't ever. I have never been really a full-time freelancer. Only in the times when I was in between jobs was that, like, my full-time thing. Like, that was it. You know, my husband makes enough and I do enough at my part-time job that I don't have to have a full-time 9-to-5, but I still have a day job, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's, you know, it's hard, you know, and between having to do that and doing freelancing, in terms of me time, one downside that I've always had being a freelancer is that you're doing it because you're a creative person. I'm a creative person. You're a creative person. The people that are in RPGs are creative people. So the odds that you have personal projects that you would like to work on is high, right? But if you're freelancing yeah. and you're trying to make a living freelancing, your time is completely, your time and your creative energy is completely made up of making things for other people who are paying you money. And so it's a struggle that I have had for over a decade now in terms of writing for other people versus trying to do my own thing, you know, versus trying to, you know, I have books and a graphic novel and you and I have our game that we're working on, you know, I mean, people may have heard about it if they're listening to this podcast, but you know it's maybe we might have talked about it once or twice on here, but
what is it we're calling it, the Iron Bound? Yes, that yeah, sounds about
something
right.
something like that. We're still workshopping, but you know. The projects, the personal ones that are yours and completely yours, or your, and in our case, you and me's creative, like, we are the ones that are in control of this. Like, the buck stops here with us. It's harder to have, you know, because you spend so much of your time trying to make money by people who have their own things. And so to be in a project where you are kind of the creative director of it and not just kind of taking things people give you and writing stuff within those parameters. Don't get me wrong. That's creative as well. That is extremely creative work. And it is a skill to have, to be able to take something people describe, somebody describes to you or lays out for you of requirements of kind of what they're envisioning and putting that to life is a skill. But as a creative person, I also want to make things that are just me, you know, that are mine, yeah. that are completely things that I had influence over every aspect of it, you know? And that's the downside, is that you sacrifice your own creative ability. I mean, for lack of a better word, you're leasing out your creative ability to other people. And so sacrificing some of your own creative ability in that process, you know, you're giving up your time. And it's not like, you know, there's a limit to creativity. There isn't, but there is a limit to time, and there's a limit to energy, and there is a limit to creative spoons. You know, sometimes you have days where you have brain so hard writing that, you know, you can't brain anymore on your own project because you spent all your creative brain power and making the words go on other people's stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, indeed. It was weird. I always used to kind of, you know, and not always, but at times I would end up having an adverse effect where I'd be working on something that, and, you know, particularly when I was first starting to do some of the card games and, you know, especially too looking at the solo player card games that I was working on. And then I would kind of, something about it would click as I'm looking about it to go like, you know, oh, so that's what this is. This actually kind of automates the turn sequence. Oh, interesting. And then that helps me kind of figure out something I'm working on for something else of my own. And so in some mm-hmm. cases for me, I found that they were ways to get that kind of creative spurt. But some of that was also too, because at sometimes when I'm doing layout, I'm not really thinking about the project itself. It becomes automated after a while. And that allows my brain to kind of start to wander a little bit. And then that's when it's just like, I'm going to try implementing something like this into Killshot Syndicate and let's see how that plays out. And then that inspires me to write and everything else like that. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of that is that ended up taking away from family time with me mm-hmm. because, you know, it was almost like I had finally found a career that fed my obsession, and rather than quenching it, it made it worse. Mm-hmm. And so I was going overboard on the amount of stuff that I was working on. And there's mm-hmm. a part of me now that starts to wonder if I was doing that as like this kind of unconscious coping mechanism to deal with the stress and everything that I was going through. Because for me, like the way you were talking about how it's like, you know, your husband, you know, makes a living that is able to, you have two incomes in your household. Mm-hmm. My household, it was just mine at that time. What I was bringing in for freelance was the household income. Mm-hmm. Because my wife is on the bipolar spectrum. And mm-hmm. so she has her highs and she has her lows. And at that time, she was dealing with a pretty long-lasting low that she mm-hmm. has since recently come out of. And the timing of it was kind of like, I think that was when I started to realize it's just like, maybe I could start walking away from some of this now that she's ready to step back in, you know, and she got a job and she's back out there kicking ass and loving it and taking names and everything. And, but at mm-hmm. that time it was just me, and all the burden was, you know, the all of this freelance has to pay the bills. And what it wasn't doing enough mm-hmm. to pay the bills. My brain was saying, well, that's because you're not doing enough. I was doing the equivalent of 60 hour work weeks, give or take, and just making enough to basically pay the bills, put food on the table, and all of this during a pandemic, which it never dawned on me until earlier this week. It was like, fuck me. I was doing all this during the worst possible time the 20th or 21st century has provided so far. You know, a pandemic's going on, a shipping crisis, everyone freaking the fuck out and all this kind of stuff. Yeah. Everything in turmoil, prices going up like mad. And yeah. I still was trying to find a way for freelance to help keep things afloat. And it never did. You know, like it for me, it's I know that there are some who are able to, but they definitely seem to be in the single digit percentages in the field. So it's it's kind of one of those things where it's like it's cool when you're in it, you're doing it, and it's working well. But for me, the parts that don't work really don't work. Really, really don't work. It's a business that relies off of creative people to create the content that they produce. And yet, I feel like we are the most expendable. If there's a part of the bridge that you're going to cut to save some people, it's the part of the bridge that has the contractors on it, that has the freelancers on it. They'll be cut so they can fall to their doom, you know? That's how it feels to me.
And I get that feeling. I do. I totally do. You know, and it's... And I don't know as if I have any solution. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know as if I have any magical, you know, like, hey, we can do this at this point. But it is like that. I mean, it's so real what you said about, like, it's so easy to get into the overworking part of freelancing. It really is easy to do. Because, you know, if you have a 9-to-5, you're like, I clock in here, I clock out here, and I'm done. Right? You know? And I'm done, you know, and whatever. But with freelancing, it's like you're making your own schedule. So it's so easy to start clocking those 50, 60 hour weeks. You know what I mean? Because you know, you don't have that context. You know, I literally, and this is no lie, I would give myself like business hours where I would literally like address, go out of the house, go to a coffee shop for however long. And that was like my working day. You know what I mean? Like I had to, give myself these boundaries, you know, that to work, you know, or I was going to end up, you know, doing that sort of thing and burning out, not wanting to do it at all, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if it's, we're definitely not here to provide solutions. I mean, because personally speaking, and once again, this is still kind of like a, you know, I just found out I'm getting divorced kind of thing where it's just like, you know what, I'm not, you know, I'm not ready to say nice things about her at this moment. I'm still like, you know, I can't believe she took all my stuff and changed the keys on the house kind of phase at the moment. Yeah. To me, it very much feels like it's a flaw with how the industry is established. I think, and you know, and it's not even a case of just like, oh, it's only pricks that are running these companies. No, it's just that there happens to be pricks that are running these companies. Yeah, it's basically
just like any other industry. They are, but you know, it's not everybody or even most people. You know, it's a system. It's not because everything I've said, and I mean, I can't speak for you, but it has nothing to do with the editors or line developers or anybody, you know what I mean, that I've worked with. This is not me picturing some target on somebody. This is talking about the nature of the industry. And I'm sure if you know, we talk to line developers and you know, editors and all of that who do the things that I would normally be the ones working with and turning my stuff into and all of that, they have similar things, you know. It's an industry thing. You know, so how do you change that industry culture? How do you change that industry norm? You know what I mean? It's certainly not an individual level. You know, it can't, it's going to be like, I mean, or it's going to be glacial. It will be, you know, I mean, people try to do with their companies, you know, the right thing, upping their base pay, you know, having policies in place, you know what I mean? But we need everybody to get on board with that, because just as much as I said, and coming back around to a more positive thing, just as much as I've said, you know, I worked with these companies where stuff happened and I wasn't able to finish a project for whatever reason or, you know, whatever. I have had several experiences that were wonderful. You know, I got paid a great amount of money. I was able to have a lot of leeway over the project. And I got all sorts of cool benefits and swag and thing from the project as well. Like, so I've had that experience too, you know? So there are companies out there and there are people out there trying to do it. But it's one of those things where, yes, we are. But you know, it needs to come to a percentage tipping point where these people are doing that. For it to like have any lasting effect on the industry itself, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's one of the things for me too, is that one of the things I am very glad about is that things ended the way that they did. It was almost kind of one of those, I needed someone to come and basically kick me in the nuts in order to really let me know that this was done. And that it happened in a way that it was like, oh, I didn't actually screw up. I did not screw up, you know, that this was something where, you know, this is just the way these people want to run their businesses. And I just don't want anything to do with that anymore. So for me, you know, and I did, it was one of those things like, you know, when this big client told me, it's just like, you know, we're not going to be sending you as much work for the next little while. I was like, well, then I think I'm just going to go. You know, I made the choice to leave. I could have stuck around and said, like, I'm so sorry. Just let me know whenever you need me. I really apologize. And constantly, you know, start sending, you know, like, apology cards to everybody and trying to get on everyone's good graces. It was just like, wow, okay, no, if this is how things are going to go and I'm already not enjoying myself, I'm out. You know, peace, everybody. I'm going to finish up what I'm doing and I'm going to go. And as a result, that has helped me, you know, realize this wasn't me. This was the industry. It's not hospitable for me. It's one of those things, if I were to get back in and to do work in this field again, it would be at the very least a salary position, you know, because it's kind of like the view from the outside looking in just kind of seemed like, you know, like, well, they don't look like they worry about paying their bills. But for some reason, they're also not the ones making the content. So, you know, that disparity was just like, until someone comes to me with an offer that feels like, oh, yes, we noticed that there was this really thick piece of glass between contractors and salaried people. We took that right out. In fact, we don't have contractors. So long as you're working with us, you're, you know, salary, you're on a regular pay. We want you to be comfortable, happy, because that makes you produce better content. Until that day happens, you know, I'm out. I'm going to go back to doing what I enjoy doing for projects that I want to work on with people that I trust, who I find interesting, you know, how it started. And am I going to take the stuff that I learned to make my own things way better? You bet your ass I am. I am totally taking the things that I have learned to improve and to do something different. Because this industry is so tightly wound up. And I think the OGL fiasco from January of this year, which also stressed me the hell out. Oh, my God. That stressed me out so much. Because, and it did everybody. It's like the industry is so tightly wound up that if one spring pops, the entire machine could collapse. And the OGL is a ideal example of that broken spring theory. To me,
I've never seen anything like just put people like that, like in the few years that I've been doing it, like in the years that I've been doing it, like when that happened, I'd never seen the industry like come together and be like, you know what I mean? Like I mean, the community has come together and the industry has come together in certain things. But this one was like instantaneous and decisive of like, absolutely not.
It was like watching the stock market crash in 1927, Black Friday, you know, it was like watching that, but in tabletop RPGs. It was so big that news outlets that don't give two shits about role-playing games were covering and breaking down this OGL fiasco, you know? So to me, that's when it started to become a sign of just like, you know what, this industry is really cool. And there is definitely an active attempt to corporatize tabletop role-playing games, particularly because it is now seen that there is great potential for lots of money. And basically, once you realize that there's still blood in a wounded animal, it attracts predators. Honestly, you know, like, and what I personally have gone through does not dissuade me from that opinion at the least. If anything, it's like, yeah, I've kind of seen it for myself and I've got the scars to prove it. That's why for me, it's one of those things where it's like, I still love this medium. I still adore the idea. This is still my creative outlet, but now I just don't want to be worried about, you know, well, I don't want to say something about this, or I don't want to release this title. I don't want to, I love the idea of making this project, but I don't want to actually release it because I can't take the risk that I'm not going to get work as a result, you know, and, you know, now, and once again, I might be, you know, completely swinging in the other direction. I might be overcompensating at the moment, but it is one of those things where I now feel I'm better skilled and more liberated to do what I've actually really always wanted to do, and that is my own thing. Really, really awesome versions of my own thing. I don't want to do an adaptation of a best-selling book and turn it into a movie. I want an original screenplay that I wrote, you know, and maybe I wrote with someone else and all this other kind of stuff. That's what I've really wanted. And that's what I plan on doing with it. So I don't regret what I've gone through in the scheme of things, because it's like I've been divorced. This is my second marriage that I'm currently on. I don't regret my first marriage because I learned things as a result of my first marriage. And I probably learn more about myself when that marriage ended, because it was like, oh, yeah, she really had to put up with a lot of bullshit. I was not emotionally ready on so many levels. That poor woman had to put up with so much bullshit from me. And it really made me stop and think of just like, okay, this clearly is an opportunity for me to do something for myself, to fix myself, quote unquote. And I feel like this is the time is now. It sucks to go through, but I feel it's going to make me a better person. It's going to make me a better designer. It's going to make me a better artist.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this has been, is there any other in particular, any other topic before we kind of move along and wrap up that you wanted to bring up at all?
No, I think that really, I mean, I could probably go on for a couple more hours to tell you the part. And we've already done a trilogy of episodes. So I think it's one of those things like in summary, I think it's, I know, you know, for me and Danny, if there's anything else you want our listeners to really kind of take from all this in summary, is that freelancing in the gaming sphere can be incredibly rewarding, but it is definitely full of challenges. And I think it's important that people know going into it that there is the potential for things to get a little predatory, where it's going to be at the expense of your mental health from time to time. That is a risk. Some of the horror stories I've heard from other people recently, it is one of those things where if you're going to do it, awesome. Welcome aboard. Love to see what you're able to contribute to this. Some people, they're able to just do like a tiny ripple in the pond. Some people are able to make giant waves that take out a city. You know, it's just when you do, just, you know, I think it's important to know that it is an industry, that it's hard. And if it spits you out and chews you up, I want to make sure I get that right, because the wrong sequence could really go wrong. It's not necessarily because you suck. it's just simply the nature of the beast. You know, some celebrities become celebrities because they got very lucky in some ways. And some people who mm-hmm. really should have become a big deal got pushed out the door for factors that had nothing to do with them. So I think that's really the main thing for me is, you know, if you're listening to this grumpy old man and you think he's quashing on your dreams, he's not quashing on them necessarily, but he's been there and tried and wants to make sure that things have the potential to be better for the next generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's an industry of, you know, extreme up and downs. You know what I mean? Like, the ups are ups. And the downs are downs, you know, like it's, you know, feast and famine, as we all like to say in the industry, you know, you're either got all this stuff going on or you're depressed because you don't have a lot going on, you know, like, you know, and because it's freelancing, because you're kind of the one in charge of you in your freelancing, like if you're going into work, like when I go into work in my day job, there's a lot of disassociation I can do with that job in terms of what happens during a day, you know, criticism and stuff like that. I have a healthy disassociation from it. But with freelancing, it all became, at least for me, I don't know if anyone else is like this, it all became a little bit more personal. You know what I mean? If I failed, it was a personal failure. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
Is that making sense? I don't know if I'm making sense. Like, if there's not kind of a you know what I mean? Everything feels a lot more immediate and personal in terms of freelancing, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it does. It makes total sense to me. I think it's kind of one of those things where it's like anyone else that has been in similar situations, worked in the field and everything like that, I think understand it too. If it's one of those things where if it doesn't make sense, I think you haven't been there. Yeah, you had to be there. You know, you had to see it for yourself. You had to be there when the joke was told. It's not as funny as when Gary tells it, kind of a situation.
Yeah, yeah. It's just, you know, you're putting, with my day job, you know, it's like a specific set of things that I do. It's not me, but with creative endeavors, it always is a part of yourself in some way that you're writing in there. And what you get done or don't get done, you know, you always have this feeling like it reflects on you. And it does in a way, but I don't think as much as people imagine, you know. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. In the end, yeah, I mean, I just want people to take away from it that is ups and downs. And there are things you deal with you wouldn't expect you'd have to deal with. And but in the end, it is also rewarding too, you know. I mean, you just have to consider if that's something you really want, you know, if it's something that is worth all of what comes with it for you and everything. And, you know, because it can be rewarding and, you know, it can be, you know, depressing and it can be all of those things at the same time, even, you know, I mean, I've had the experience of having one project going really well and doing gangbusters while my other project was limping along on painkillers and, you know, hope, you know, so.
Yeah.
So, you know, could be going on at the same time.
Yeah. Well, my opinion on this, and I think I'll wrap it up with this little story. My idea of what this recording was going to be like is drastically different than how it was Tuesday morning. Tuesday morning was just kind of like I'm dropping names on this son of a bitch. Like, I don't care. I want people to know who hurt me and all this kind of stuff. And I want mm-hmm. people to know who are my friends throughout this kind of stuff. You know, who were people that I could count on? And then who were people who stabbed me in the back? But I ended up having an absolutely wonderful phone call with Alex Roberts Tuesday night, where she had reached out. And to say that we knew each other well enough for her to want to actually call and talk to me, like, you know, voice to voice over the phone, was something I didn't suspect. We had played in a game together. I actually had the luxury of playing a very early playtest of her game for the Queen. Like, when it was still, like, handwritten on cue cards, like, that really early version of the game. And it was a great time. It was magnificent. And I specifically, you know, literally like burst through the curtain when I overheard that she was looking for players to test out this game of hers. I didn't know her. I was a huge fan of hers from her podcast backstory. And, you know, it was just like this wonderful RPG interview show. More so about LARPs more than RPGs, really. So I was a huge fan, and she had become like a role model of mine, of basically, this is who I want to be. I want to be someone like Alex. You know, that's my success level. And so it was just like, even if all I do is I get to play at this one table this one time, I'll take it. It'll be awesome. And I guess, to then have Alex years later see the post I made about on Facebook about, that's it, I'm calling it quits and all this, you know, basically everything we talked about here today. And then for her to reach out and say, let's talk, let's catch up, and to let me kind of vent and to, you know, kind of give advice from her own perspective of things and stuff was awesome. And there's no way that would have happened without that hard work and that massive effort that I took to, I want to meet these people. I want to get to know the networking that I did as part of my quest to get more work was like, after, as soon as that phone call started, to know that it was basically just like, one of my role models in this industry is taking time out of her day to call me to basically say, hey, I heard what you're going through. That sucks. And I'm here to give you a little support. Was to me, it suddenly was that was the moment where I'm just like, you know what? I'm going to be okay. This is going to be fine. This is a hurdle. Mm-hmm. It's a step, and it sucks. And it's not how I wanted it to go. But that phone call was the perfect thing I needed to help me cope with it. Mm-hmm. And so, Alex, if you're out there and you're listening to this, thank you oh so much. And I'm never going to stop bragging about the fact that I got to talk to you for an hour, you know, just the two of us to have that time and talk shop and everything like that. It was awesome. And that's what motivates me to keep going. Like, I'm no longer burnt out. It's like I said, now it's just like, now I really want to start kicking down some doors and, you know, like, and smoke bombing the room and just be like, watch this, and laser lights appear. And it's like an entire magic show unto itself. Like, it's, I'm just so jazzed to finally be able to kind of be free and be able to get out there to try stuff again.
Right. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, if anybody out there has any other stories or any other thoughts or about freelancing, do feel free to drop us a line online in the various places you can find us. And until next time, we wish you a little gaming in your magic and a little magic in your gaming.
The Covenstead Podcast was created and produced by Danielle Delisle and Todd Crapper. Theme music written and composed by John Thompson from the Rook and Rask channel on Twitch. Definitely check them out. Special thanks to all of our backers: Alex, Tim Brannan, Chris Atrata, Century Guild, Nicholas Diak, Fool's Moon Entertainment, Kaboom.com, -50s, no apologies, Brian P. Kurtz, Jason LeDuc, Civ Light, Revna, Derek Simsek, Danielle Thomas, Phil Watson, Jacob Wood, and Victor Wyatt.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.